Well, you did it. You made it to the end of the Ten Commandments.
Yeah.
You heard all of Psalm 119, the longest psalm in the entire Bible. So long, we have read it over 11 weeks, and every one of those Psalter readings never failed to feel like 5 verses longer than what I really wanted to make you sit through in worship. We have sung through the entirety of Luther's hymn arrangement, and now we're here at the final commandment. This is Exodus 20, verse 17. You shall not covet your neighbor's house. You shall not covet your neighbor's wife, or male or female slave, or ox or donkey, or anything that belongs to your neighbor. Now, this final commandment, you shall not covet, it marks the last shift we're going to see in the Ten Commandments. So first, we saw a shift between a focus on God and a focus on our neighbor or the community around us, between the fourth and the fifth commandment. And then as we progressed from 5 up through 9, we've sort of gradually widened our sphere of concern in the commandments. First with the self and the closest neighbor, our parents, next to spouse and your closest family members, and finally to the neighbor and the acquaintance and the stranger and the social rules that kind of govern all of us. And here, as we turn to the 10th commandment, this is the final and I think in many ways most challenging shift of the entire Decalogue. This commandment moves from our actions, those things that we do, stealing, murder, adultery, lying, honoring the Sabbath day, all of those things, and instead it turns toward our thoughts and our intentions. Because coveting, really, when you sort of boil it down to what it is, it can, in a sense, sort of be a victimless crime so long as it remains only in our own mind. It doesn't have an action that outwardly wounds someone in and of itself. I can be as desirous as I want of my best friend's beautiful closet full of clothes, or my neighbor's shiny new car that works on a Sunday morning, or my colleague's successful husband, or that stranger's brilliant, well-behaved, quiet children who always seem to do the right thing. I can be absolutely green with envy, rotting from the inside out, and so long as those words never leave my lips, the only one to really suffer is me. And in fact, we are very adept as a society at being civil and sociable with one another in such a way that we can put up a mask so that others cannot perceive the presence of our own covetousness if we're really well practiced. But of course, this commandment's here for a reason, right? And I think it would be enough to simply have this commandment to point out that covetousness and envy and greed rot our own spiritual selves. Envy and greed wreak havoc on our own sense of gratitude and well-being. And that would be enough if the commandment simply meant that. And it might even be enough to say that this is a commandment of prevention. This commandment prevents the greater sins of action by stopping us first at intent. Adultery doesn't happen unless you first covet another person. Envy of an item could lead to theft and stealing. Greed of reputation can cause lying tongues to betray all of our better angels in a flash. So it might be enough to simply say this is a commandment that prevents greater sins of actions. But as I'm sure you've guessed so far, if I'm only like 2 paragraphs into my sermon, there must be more to this commandment than that. Now, I've been reading through Martin Luther and John Calvin and all the rest as I've been preparing these sermons, and some weeks I've differed with them slightly. And this week, when I opened up John Calvin's commentary, I was utterly moved by his first few sentences. He boiled down this commandment, and really, in many ways, the whole of the Ten Commandments, into just these perfect few sentences. So he writes about this: the purpose of this commandment is, since God wills that our whole soul should be possessed with a disposition to love, we must banish from our hearts all desire contrary to love. To sum up, then, no thought should steal upon us to move our hearts toward harmful covetousness that tends to our neighbor's loss. To this corresponds the opposite precept: whatever we conceive, deliberate, will, or attempt is to be linked to our neighbor's good and advantage. I love that. I'll read just the first few lines again because I think it's a lot of word salad there. The purpose of this commandment is, since God wills that our whole soul should be possessed with a disposition to love, we must banish from our hearts all desire contrary to love. And I read that and I thought, isn't that really in many ways the root of all 10 commandments? To be possessed with a disposition toward love and to banish from our hearts anything contrary. And envy and greed and ill desire and covetousness, all of those thoughts do exactly that. They turn our heart toward the opposite of love, and indeed they might lead to our neighbor's loss. And so instead, Calvin says, turn your heart toward those which would do your neighbor good. Now, much of the world that we live in, especially thanks to Liz's excellent children's message this morning, we can see it's just geared for greed. Here are a dozen beautiful Christmas window displays filled with shiny things that you never knew you wanted until you walked by. I remember last year, Nordstrom was selling these beautiful ball gowns made out of like puffy coat material. I never knew I wanted a puffy coat ball gown until I saw one, and too bad it was like $5,000. I wasn't going to buy it, but I had a moment of real covetousness. It looked so warm and so elegant at the same time. Or over there, your neighbor's yard just recently got re-landscaped, and now yours, in comparison, looks just a little tatty around the edges. Or let me post my best and most staged, adorable pictures of my children on Instagram so that when you open up my feed, all you really see is contented little sandy-haired boys reading quietly in overstuffed chairs or playing contentedly with one another, helping around the house, never sassing their parents or fighting with sticks in the front yard or anything like that. Aren't you jealous of my beautiful, perfect family and my clearly superior parenting skills? But of course, right? Christmas windows and newly manicured yards and photo spreads on social media are anything but reality. And we cognitively know that. We are smart enough to look at these things and say, that is advertising. They just paid a lot of money to have their yard done, and social media is not reality. And also, it is nearly impossible to move our little reptilian brains to actually believe those things. This is why advertising is so effective. It invites us into this warm, comfortable pool of greed and covetousness, and it feels so nice just to sit there and enjoy for a while. And I think people do this, not necessarily because it's super malicious, but because capitalism as a system that we all live in works when we are all just unhappy enough to buy more goods and services, just certain that that next thing that we get will make us a little bit happier or healthier or more well off. But of course it won't, right? And if we heed Calvin's warning well, we take this to heart, that the things of this world do not make us happy, and they in fact run the risk of turning our heart away from love, seeking that which might not bring our neighbor's advantage. So this commandment, in many ways, it's the most challenging of the bunch because it's asking us, in a sense, to constantly rewire our own brains, to move them away from all the shiny objects of the world we live in toward a deeper and more meaningful and far more complicated practice of loving one another and seeking our neighbor's advantage. Start with how you think, this commandment says. Don't covet, and the rest will follow. So the question is, how do we actually do that? That's really hard. I think there's a lot of things we can do. One of them, of course, is to practice gratitude. That seems really simple, and I did align this sermon with Thanksgiving because it's apropos of the season. But I do think seeking to be grateful for the gifts that we have been given, doing it every day as a matter of course. You brush your teeth and you list five things you're thankful for. There's actually tons of studies that say people who write down 5 to 10 things every day that they are thankful for are genuinely happier, more grateful people. That is a practice. You need the muscle memory. Express gratitude. But then there's this other piece that I think could be really helpful, but is very challenging. The New York Times a couple weeks ago published this great article about keeping up with the Joneses. And the idea of the article was like, if you look around at your sort of equivalent social economic status and someone can afford things that you're not able to afford, big trip to Disneyland or whatever it might be, it's very easy to blame yourself and to say, oh my gosh, what am I doing wrong? Am I not saving enough? Am I bad with money? Like, maybe I just don't get it. Maybe I'm really like a terrible spender. Like, who knows? And the New York Times said, no, if you look around at people who you perceive to be in your same economic class and they're doing far more than you are, it's either because of secret debt or secret wealth. That we don't talk about debt or wealth in our country at all. And that, I think, can lead to really severe cases of covetousness. I don't understand why you're able to do what you are able to do when I perceive that we're equal, right? And I think the way we could break that cycle is with a little bit of honesty in our world. So I think that that can happen in really simple ways, and I think it can happen in much harder and more vulnerable ways. So this week, John and I had one of our seminary friends over for dinner, and he came over, and it had been kind of a raggedy week around our house. I didn't have a lot of time. I was gone. John was in and out, had the kids by himself. So by the time our friend came over, I had enough time in my life to basically clean the bathroom because I live with three small boys and the bathroom was unbearably gross by that point in the week. And I like swept up some like balls of dog hair from the corners, but that was pretty much all I could do. John cooked exactly the same meal for dinner that night that he had planned to already, nothing fancy. And our friend came in and sat down and all he wanted was to be with other people who weren't going to be demanding something from him because he had just had a really demanding week at work. And it was great, and we enjoyed one another's company, and our house was a little ragged around the edges, and it was fine because we enjoy one another. Our house was very honest to where we were at. And I try to do that, actually, intentionally. Even in weeks when I have more time, I might try to clean, but if you come over to my house, you're probably going to see, like, little balls of dog hair floating here and there, or like, please don't look under my couch and discover how many toys my kids have shoved underneath. You might get a clean bathroom, or you may not sometimes. That just might happen. And that kind of honesty, I think, can build back and forth relationships that say, this is my honest life. I'm not going to shove a bunch of things into a closet so you don't see a cluttered house. I do the same thing on Instagram from time to time. Some of you guys follow me on Instagram, and I love that. If you want to find me, you can. But I sometimes post pictures of myself with like no makeup or weird hairdos or oddball concerns throughout my day. Last week when John was out of town, pretty much every night I posted a different weird hairdo and whatever the worst moment of the day was, taking care of our kids by myself or worries that John's plane was going to blow up mid-flight and this is going to be my life forever. And I find that what I'm trying to convey in those posts is a realistic depiction of where I am at and where my family is at. Because I would rather be honest on social media and occasionally have people be like, wow, she's a real weirdo, than be too shiny and cause the opposite, for people to think that my life doesn't have rough edges and it's really hard to parent three little boys and I don't know what to do with my hair. I'm terrible with it. I think that putting our unvarnished selves forward in our relationships, in our homes, on social media, those are ways that we can promote honesty with one another, and honesty begins to chip away at the covetousness that we don't often even realize is building up. There are more vulnerable ways to do this that I think are hard to talk about. A lot of those have to do with money. The money that we have, the money that we've been given, the money that we need, the ways that we are in debt. Something that I have learned frequently when I'm talking to other solo pastors is to note that I had a full scholarship for my undergraduate education, and Princeton Seminary was very generous for graduate school. And because of that, I didn't have educational debt, and I was able to take a very low-paid call as my first church job. Plenty of my peers are not able to make that choice. But by saying that out loud to one another, it cuts down on that covetousness and it reveals the honesty of where we are at as pastors and where the church is at in general. Those are hard and pretty vulnerable conversations to have with people because money is a very taboo topic. But I think that by becoming more open together with that, we fight back against covetousness and the way that it kind of ruins our relationships. So this week, as we're heading into Thanksgiving, this is my encouragement to you. Be grateful, practice that, but also look for ways to be honest. Be honest with yourself and your family, with your friends. Be comfortable if your Thanksgiving dinner is not perfect, because that's great. That is the world that we live in. If you wake up in the morning and have a full carton of eggs and want an omelet, give thanks to God for that in that moment. Compliment your spouse on something they've done this week. You know, tell your kids that they are working hard and that you see that in them. Cultivate these moments of gratitude and of honesty, and you will be living into this commandment. And do what Calvin said. Be possessed with a disposition to love, and banish from your heart all desire contrary to love. Let no thought move your heart to a harmful covetousness that would lead to your neighbor's loss. Whatever you conceive, deliberate, will, or attempt, let it be linked to your neighbor's good and your neighbor's advantage. And in this, I think God will be pleased and you will be better off, and whether they know it or not, your neighbor will be better off too. Amen.